A former High Court judge says officers involved in the investigation into an alleged VIP paedophile ring should themselves be investigated. Sir Richard Henriques says police knew Carl Beach was inconsistent when applying for warrants to search suspects' homes. The former MP, Harvey Proctor, is one of those who was falsely accused. Mr. Beach made up lurid claims that he, along with a wider ring of well-known establishment figures, abused and even killed boys. All the allegations were totally made up by the fantasist Carl Beach, who has been jailed for 18 years. We're going to run an extended interview this morning on The Nolan Show with one of Carl Beach's victims, Harvey Proctor. And a warning, you might find some of this interview disturbing.
About 8 o'clock that morning, when the dogs started barking, that usually means there's somebody around. It was an isolated house, previous farmhouse, half a mile to the nearest neighbour. Good views looking back of the castle, an idyllic home where I'd planned to live out the rest of my life, work at the castle probably for another 10 years as private secretary to the Duke of Rutland. I was content. I was happy. All that changed that day. A police sergeant, a detective sergeant, came to my door with a search warrant. Now we find it was an illegal search warrant, closely followed by 17 or 18 police officers, all in those blue forensic uniforms.
So you opened the door, presumably.
I got the dogs quiet, because the police officer was nervous about my dogs. I've got a Japanese Akita, she's called Sushi, and I've got a red boxer called Duke. So I had to put them out into the garden because the police were nervous about my pets.
And then all of a sudden, you're bombarded with these police officers. Did you know? So what did they tell you? What was on the search warrant, Harvey?
Well, they were investigating historical child sexual abuse and murder. But it never occurred to me, knowing that I had not murdered anyone, that anybody had suggested, remotely did I think that anybody had suggested, that I had murdered not one, but three children, two of whom the allegations were by my own hand. Those are very distressing.
I'm so sorry. But I want people to know what these people have done to you. I want them to keep on hearing it. I'm so sorry, because this is the trauma all these years later. If they get this wrong, this is what it does.
I wanted to know what was being alleged. I wanted to be interviewed at the earliest opportunity so I could discover what stupidity somebody might have said about me.
And you're standing in your home, and now you've lost the power of your own home. These people are gone through your home, gone through your personal stuff. Is that it?
Through my home. And they told me that my office within the castle at the same time was also being raided in front of all my colleagues where I used to work. And they stayed in the house for 15 hours. And they had a white van that they started to fill up with everything. I was in my sitting room. They were in all the rooms at once, including three outbuildings. They took all my computers. They were trawling for as much information as they could get, because they had no information. They only had the uncorroborated testimony of their star witness, who was called Nick, and we now know he was Mr. Carl Beach.
A fantasist,
but let's be clear about this. He was a perverter of the course of justice. He was a paedophile. He was a fraudster. And the Metropolitan Police believed him without investigating him in any form. I tried to keep my dignity and I tried to keep polite. And that continued until it was suggested that my partner might want to sleep. And I said, we've got some sleeping tablets, prescribed sleeping tablets in the bedroom. Can I go and get them? And the detective sergeant said, yes. I went to try and get the sleeping tablets. And a police officer said, no, he bagged them up and couldn't get out a sleeping tablet for my partner. That detective constable, now promoted to detective sergeant, I have subsequently learnt, was Mr. Beach's liaison officer. He should never have been in my home. By the court record and evidence last week and this last few weeks and months in Newcastle, I discovered that it was him who telephoned Mr. Beach to tell him of the searches of our houses. From my house at 9 o'clock in the morning. They'd only been in the house an hour. And Mr. Beach was told, and he passed on the information to Exaro and the BBC.
So hold on a moment. The police, the Metropolitan Police, who were supposed to be impartial, they should not have been believing Carl Beach any more or any less, Harvey, than believing you. They should have been right in the middle gathering evidence, and that's it. They were phoning him from your home in the middle of a search.
Yes. Outrageous. I've only just discovered this in the last few months. And then, I know you want to keep on with the search of the house, and I'm quite happy to answer more questions about that. This detective constable, who wouldn't let my partner have his sleeping tablets, then the Metropolitan Police put him in charge of interviewing me at my two police interviews, one for 6 hours and another for 2.5. In none of that time did they tell me that DC was Mr. Beach's liaison officer.
You were not arrested at that time. Is that right? So they just leave your home again. They cautioned you.
I was not arrested or charged. They didn't caution me. I was only cautioned. I was not arrested or charged. They didn't caution me. I was only cautioned when I was interviewed many weeks later. As I said before, I wanted to be interviewed. They promised me that I would be interviewed at the earliest opportunity. They set up two dates to be interviewed, and each time at the last minute they cancelled the interviews. And then when I'd gone off to Spain.
And that in itself, sorry to interrupt, but that yes. In itself has a psychological impact on you, because what you wanted to do was tell your story. And when they're cancelling that interview at the last time, that is trauma in itself at the last moment when they're doing that.
Yes, indeed. I wanted to know what it was I was accused of. I wanted to know why 18 police officers had come to my house and my office in the castle. What was it that I was supposed to have done? I was left in limbo about that and everything else until a few days before my first interview, which took place on the 18th of June, when I learnt what it was I was supposed to have done.
And when that was read out to you, well, you tell me what impact that has on a human being.
Well, my solicitors decided not to send me the disclosure document from the police, which formed the basis of the first interview on the 18th of June, because they thought it would be too damaging to read it alone. So they invited me to their offices so that I would have people with me when they gave me the document to read. It was horrendous. It was a mixture of being horrendous because of the gruesome detail of the allegations of what I was supposed to have done.
You were being accused.
Murder, yeah. Torture, rape, sexual abuse of children en masse and been part of a Westminster paedophile group which I knew did not exist. On the one hand, there was horror and emotional stress as a result of reading that. On the other hand, I was relieved that I now knew what I faced and the uphill task I had to defend myself. I felt as though I had to prove my innocence. It was guilty first. They weren't there thinking that I was innocent. They were thinking that I was guilty, and they were going to set out to prove it. They weren't even-handed.
I was going to say it must be an embarrassing situation when you're surrounded by others and you're being accused of torture. But presumably embarrassment goes out the window. It's nothing to do with embarrassing.
It's not embarrassing.
It's guttural. This right. It's at the core of your human identity.
It is indescribable.
And during the police interview then, you were saying this did not happen. It couldn't have happened.
Well, you know the form usually on these occasions. The solicitor advises his client to reply two words to every question that the police put at them. Those two words are no comment. Those are the words used by my accuser, Mr. Beach, when he was questioned about these matters finally by Northumbria Police. No comment, no comment, no comment. In my case, for 6 hours, my solicitors advised me to answer every question fully and truthfully, which I did. Indeed, the police were more tired than I was. Every hour and a half, they wanted a break. They said to me, "Would you like a break?" "No, let's continue." "Oh, we want a break." So they had a break. Why did they want a break? They wanted to recharge their batteries and ring Scotland Yard to get more advice on how to conduct their interview.
And when you were accused of murdering how many, Mr. Proctor? Three children?
Three children, two by my own hand.
Did you know anything about Carl Beach at this stage?
I've never met him. I had no idea who he was. I think I said to them, "Does he actually exist?" Because up to that stage, all I'd seen him was a blacked-out figure with an actor's voice interviewed on television on BBC by Tom Simons, your news correspondent, your Home Affairs correspondent, who interviewed him. It was Tom Simons who also interviewed on the 18th of December 2014, Detective Superintendent Kenning MacDonald, the lead officer, one of the lead officers in Operation Midland. And he went on television, if you remember, before Mr. Beach had really been investigated at all, and said, "Mr. Beach, Nick, we believe is credible and true." That detective superintendent, not with the Metropolitan Police, he's retired, because I've subsequently found out that the head of their then paedophile unit had told the Metropolitan Police to be very careful of Mr. Beach and to examine what he said very carefully and to investigate him. They didn't do it.
You mentioned the BBC. The BBC have said in a statement that in 2014 the BBC reported serious allegations in the public interest, which were the basis of a police murder investigation, which the police later described as credible and true. Carl Beach has since been exposed as a fantasist and serial liar, not least by an investigation from the BBC's Panorama. We express our utmost sympathy to those falsely accused by Beach and to the family of Martin Allen. That's what the BBC have said, Mr. Proctor.
I am grateful to the Panorama wing of the BBC. I am not grateful to the news team of the BBC, who splashed Mr. Beach's anonymous allegations all over the BBC when first interviewed. Your news team showed photographs to Mr. Beach of children I was supposed to have murdered, including Martin Allen. And my story is about not just the impact of the police, but the impact of certain journalists and certain politicians throughout the last 4.5 years. I noticed your tone changed. You may not recognise it yourself, but your tone changed during this interview as soon as I started in any way criticising the BBC.
OK, well, let me deal with
that. Just so you know, I noticed your tone changed.
Well, let me deal with that. You and I don't know each other, OK?
Correct.
I have been in the BBC a long time. Here's what I can assure you. And indeed, if you want to listen to a programme, it just so happens that on a complete different matter, I have been challenging the BBC incredibly robustly. And I am a journalist who has known Mr. Proctor to be one of the journalists that gives the BBC a very hard time on the BBC airwaves. And I have the freedom to do so because the BBC is a world-class journalistic organisation. And I'm telling you now that I will robustly challenge the BBC as I will challenge any other organisation. And I give you my solemn word on that.
I'm grateful for your comments.
Okay. Can I ask about the emotional impact of this on you as a human being and what this has done to you?
Well, it's created stress. Stress within my family. Incredible stresses within my family, with my partner.
Were you finding it difficult to sleep during those months and indeed years? Were you?
Then I slept well and ate well. As time has gone on, in the last few months of this year, I sleep very little. I am not the same person I was in March 2015.
What has changed?
I've had physical operations. I was physically very well. I am not physically well now. I have had mental difficulties. I am not as patient as I used to be. I have been told I'm suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, the sort of thing that happens to people who have a horrible experience one day and then have flashbacks and continue to relive that one day thereafter. The difference in my case is that these events have continued for 4.5 years, and it looks as though they're going to continue for some time to come. That is very stressful and onerous.
I asked Harvey, given the list of traumatic things he had been through, what he believed to be at the centre of that.
It is the allegations that anyone could think that I could have done any of those things, including the murder of children. That, unless you're in my situation, it is impossible to understand, I think, the impact of that on one's personality, on one's life, and on one's mental thought processes.
I hear it. Does it make you feel like you can't be among other people, that they're wondering about you? Or I'm wondering, with stress in this way, does your brain force you to play out, had you been found guilty, do you imagine yourself in jail? Or what does your brain do in a situation like this because of the post-traumatic stress?
I was a confident, outgoing person in March 2015. I know in myself that I'm not that same person. Of course, it runs through your mind, as you said, that had a court been as stupid as the Metropolitan Police and convicted me, the offences were so great, so onerous, so heinous, that I would have been, if found guilty, imprisoned for the rest of my life.
And how did you rationalise that prospect?
I couldn't. And I haven't.
It's a fear, Mr. Proctor, isn't it? The fear wasn't rational because you were innocent, and yet the fear was logical because you had a police force who were believing your accuser. And it's a fear. It's a fear. What if?
Well,
what if they believe?
Yes, it was what if.
Did you contemplate suicide? And I'm sorry to ask that question so starkly, but I'm asking this in the context of what happened here. Did it threaten your life, your existence?
I considered it in the early part of the summer of 2015, while I was in living on my own in the house that they had trashed. I considered it. I didn't consider a method or a means. And some of my colleagues where I used to work, I think, kept a special eye upon me. And I'm grateful to them for doing that.
Because at that point, and this is the real reason behind my question, Harvey, at that point where you were even contemplating that, you're a very intelligent man, and you had a decision to make around the thinking of that. And that would have been that you either fight and you clear your name, or had you have taken your life, then that would have added to the suspicion, wouldn't it? And you could, because you could not have fought back against this fantasist, because you wouldn't have been here.
It is for that reason that I decided to fight. It wasn't so much the fantasist, Nick, who I was fighting. It was the Metropolitan Police. And 4.5 years later, I'm still fighting the Metropolitan Police for fair compensation for what has happened to me.
Because that's one of the other realities of this. One of the other realities is you're fighting to survive. You're literally fighting for life. And then there is the reality of the world. You don't have a job and the bills are still coming in.
Oh, well, I now owe lots of friends and people a fair degree of money. If you can imagine no salary coming in for 4.5 years when I was in a good job, which I enjoyed and appreciated, and I think I was appreciated too. And then suddenly to go from that to this position where I'm dependent on friends to be able to live, that is why I do need a fair settlement from the Metropolitan Police.
And I'll come to that momentarily.
Yes.
But
yes.
Those friends who, because in a situation like yours, there will have been people that will have immediately distanced themselves from you. And I'm guessing that they're probably trying to reach out to you now. And it was a sign of a real friend who stood by you during that. And I'm sure you're distinguishing between the two that I've just described. And again, those friends who not only stood by you, but gave you money.
I am, and I'm grateful to the friends who stuck by me and emotionally and monetary help, I appreciate very much that, and I can never thank them enough. Of the others, there are two types. There are people that I knew, and when they saw the media coverage of what had happened to me, they dropped me like a stone.
Were there many?
Quite a number. And then there were others who saw the media, dropped me like a stone, and then when Operation Midland ended, sought to get back into my life. I am not sure which I have the most revulsion for.
Was there anyone particularly close to you who dropped you? Was there anyone who was a close, close friend?
I'm not going to give them the benefit of considering them on air time.
Okay. Okay. In terms of the compensation from the Metropolitan Police, have they admitted wrongdoing? Or are they still trying? Is it the quantum they're fighting? Is it the amount of compensation? Or why is this still going on?
I think you're right in terms of quantum, but there's also detail. Let me try and cover both. In terms of detail, when Sir Richard Enriquez reported on the 8th of November 2016, how coincidental that it was American Presidential Day that the Metropolitan Police revealed 12% of the Sir Richard Enriquez report at that time. Sir Bernard Hogan Howe apologised to me on a number of fronts, including saying that they were wrong to search my house. Now, the lawyers for the Metropolitan Police, when I put in my solicitors put in my civil claim against the Metropolitan Police for compensation, etc., they seek to deny that the search of my house was wrong. They seek to say that I did not lose my job or my home because of Operation Midland, a claim immediately denied by letters from the Duke of Rutland, for whom I worked, who made it clear that I was given the option of resigning or being sacked because of the circumstances of March 2015. Now, of course, I hope that the Metropolitan Police will make sense of this, realise after the trial last week and after Sir Richard Enriquez's further damning comments in the Daily Mail, that it will be sensible for them and I to mediate a fair, commensurate settlement of my just claim against them. I never wanted to do this. It was Sir Richard, Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, when he met me personally to apologise in December 2016, said to me, "You must contact our lawyers with your claims against us." He then retired 2 months later.
Yeah.
My lawyers have been fighting their lawyers ever since. My QC, Geoffrey Robertson, is a distinguished QC. I have great faith in him. But the Metropolitan Police are wrong to stretch this out so long. The basis of why they are stretching it out so long, I have rationalised in my brain now. It is because they hope I will die or go away. I'm not going to go away. Whether I die is not in my hands.
I hope you take what I'm about to say in the right spirit, because it's said in a genuine way. Mr. Proctor, if you do die, you die with everyone knowing you are an innocent man, and no amount of money will, and I understand why the money's important, but you don't, there is no doubt you're an innocent man, sir. No doubt.
Thank you.
You are seeking over £1 million in compensation.
I think there was a tick box, my lawyers tell me, on whether it was under or over £1 million. And when you add up the various things, including legal costs, I think they're probably right. But that's what I'm seeking. I've made it quite clear that I want a mediated settlement. I do not want anyone to spend any more money on this, if at all possible.
Now, the deputy leader of the Labour Party, Tom Watson, as you know, has been reported about this story, because he had said that he had met Carl Beach once in the 8th of July 2014, 2 years after he had raised his question in Parliament. And he said that he had not in any way interfered in a police investigation. Do you accept that?
No. I would suggest to Mr. Tom Watson, if he is prepared to do this, he should go to the Home Affairs Select Committee and make, in the spirit of transparency, a log and reveal every telephone communication he made about Nick, as he then was, Mr. Beach, as we know him to be, anything connected with Mr. Beach, directly or indirectly. He should make a log of all his telephone calls, all his emails, all his meetings, not just with Mr. Beach, but with the Metropolitan Police. You will remember Mr. Tom Watson made his career out of scaring the hell out of the Metropolitan Police over phone hacking. He thought he would continue his political career by jumping on the bandwagon of historical child sexual abuse. And Exaro, Mark Conrad and Peter McKelvey, matter of public record, had a meeting at the House of Commons with Nick and Mr. Watson.
And of course, in those situations, and this was not the case with you, but in those situations where there are genuine victims of sexual abuse, you would want MPs to be meeting those genuine victims and reassuring them and helping them get justice.
I think this might be an opportune moment when I tell you, because I thought very deeply about what happened and why it happened and how it happened, with my provisional conclusion, and it is this: that the police at the time, being quite critical of the Conservative government and being under pressure from the Savile investigations by Surrey Police, bad PR of that, and the pressure from the Home Office to get rape convictions up and to be part of supporting the victim and survivor lobby, that the police acted as politicians and followed a political agenda at almost exactly the same time when certain politicians started to act as policemen.
Well, on Mr. Watson's part, about this meeting with Carl Beach on the 8th of July 2014, Mr. Watson continued in his statement, during that meeting, Nick, as he was referred to, said very little and did not name any of his alleged abusers. I reassured Nick that the police had made clear that all allegations of historic abuse would be taken seriously and treated sensitively. That is what the police had asked me to do, said Mr. Watson, and it was the process I followed with all those who claimed to be survivors of historic child sex abuse.
I know you have to say that. I would ask your listeners to have a look at the remarks made by Mr. Watson in numerous newspapers, particularly the Mirror, the Sunday Mirror and the Sunday People, when he was supporting Mr. Beach's claims in newspapers before Operation Midland got underway. And that's why I'm saying that he should make a log of his connections on this matter, not just with Mr. Beach, but with journalists and also with the police. If you will recall, it's a matter of public fact because it came before the Home Affairs Select Committee over Operation Vincenti, when the Metropolitan Police supported a lady called Jane, who alleged that Lord Britton had raped her. And that came to nothing too. But in the investigation, when Mr. Watson used the very words of Mr. Beach, I won't repeat them, but critical of Lord Britton, he had to apologise to Lady Britton about that. He went to the Select Committee, and at the Select Committee, it was quite clear that in Operation Vincenti, the police had made Tom Watson a stakeholder. They had kept him informed of developments on Operation Vincenti. Here he is, a senior Labour politician, being kept abreast of developments in a police investigation, a live police investigation, into a former senior Conservative Home Secretary. That's all a matter of public record.
Can I ask you, because I'm aware that you've given me an enormous amount of time, and I'm very grateful, and I hope that you want the time and space like this to tell your story in full. I haven't asked you to put words to your thoughts about Carl Beach.
I have nothing to add to what I said in my personal victim statement in the High Court, in the Crown Court in Newcastle on Friday afternoon last week, that I have icy contempt for Mr. Beach.
And my final question, have you got the ability, given what has happened to you, to be happy again in your life? Or has that been stolen from you?
I don't know. I hope so.
You don't know. Have you not been happy since this happened, since they walked in your door?
I have thought about this issue every day for 4.5 years. I've had to have a conversation about these matters every day for 4.5 years. There may come a time when I do not have to talk about it, but at the back of my mind, if not the forefront of my mind, I will think about it until the day I die.
I am so, so sorry this happened to you, Mr. Proctor. I'm saying this as one human being to another. I am so sorry that this has happened to you. And I admire your resilience and the strength that you have as a human being to have stood up and fought this is incredible. And I wish you happiness in your life, sir.
Thank you, and I'm indebted to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, here's what the Metropolitan Police said. Mr. Proctor has brought a civil action against the MPs regarding our handling of the allegations against them. The Met has filed a defence in this civil case, and we're not prepared to comment on the case outside of the legal process. The impact of Carl Beach's false allegations and the operational Midland investigation on many people has been truly dreadful and damaging to them and their families. The then Commissioner, Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, apologised in person to those most affected by the case. We remain deeply sorry. The MPs commissioned Sir Richard Henriques to undertake a review of Operation Midland because we were determined to learn lessons about our handling of the investigation. The MPs have already embedded the majority of Sir Richard's recommendations in our working practices. As a result of Sir Richard's report, we voluntarily referred ourselves to the Independent Police Complaints Commission. We fully cooperated with the IPCC independent investigation, which lasted more than 2 years, and having examined all the evidence, did not identify any criminal offences or misconduct. And in a statement, the BBC said, in 2014, BBC reported serious allegations in the public interest, which were the basis of a police murder investigation, and which the police later described as credible and true. Carl Beach has since been exposed as a fantasist and serial liar, not least by an investigation from the BBC's Panorama programme. We express our utmost sympathy to those falsely accused by Beach and to the family of Martin Allen. We also contacted Tom Watson's office for comment, but have received no response.